Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Boyd, joined once again by Ty Zanders and Matt Kinnear, and we are talking about what Quint Kesnick declared on Monday morning as the biggest story in the sport right now, and that is the reallocation of player assets. I think he chose that phrase very specifically, redistributed across the college lacrosse landscape, and what he is specifically referring to is the recent influx of NCAA transfer portal entrants, specifically in the wake of late last week clarity coming from the Ivy League that the Ivy League presidents were recommending that undergraduates do not withdraw and re-enroll in an effort to play another season of sports, basically that they shouldn't do so for athletic reasons. But if there were a legitimate academic reason that would have been pursued in a non-COVID-19 year, that was still permissible. And it being an institutional decision, we have learned that Harvard, Yale, and Princeton are not going to allow their athletes to do so. And we still don't know that much about what the other five Ivy League members are going to do, although there is a pretty widespread expectation that that's probably where they're going to net out in terms of not allowing their seniors to come back. There are still some unanswered questions, specifically around how particular programs are going to utilize the exception that would allow returning seniors scholarship amounts not to count against the 12.6 men's lacrosse scholarship limit, but we are not going to get into those in great detail because, like I said, there's still some unanswered questions. So let's get right into it. First of all, Matt and Ty, thanks for joining me. Hope you guys had a great Easter.
It was certainly interesting and unique, that's for sure. It's one that we will always remember. I'm not sure for the right reasons, but we will certainly remember this Easter.
No doubt. So Ty, I want to give it to you first because obviously you've been following this pretty closely. The news coming out of the Ivy League is in some respects surprising and in some respects unsurprising. How would you describe your reaction once there became some finality on Thursday afternoon leaking into Friday?
Yeah, I think there was definitely some shock. I think that there was it felt like there was some fear out there that, you know, even though this loophole existed to be able to withdraw and re-enroll, that you know, when it looked like it could happen in droves, there was definitely a worry amongst Ivy League coaches that, you know, a loophole could be closed, you know, and this ruling would occur. So, yeah, there was certainly shock and disappointment. But at the same time, like, you know, a bit of excitement, you know, I think it's definitely unfortunate that these kids cannot finish out their careers in the next few years, that players in the current rosters looks like, you know, they won't be able to play all 4 years in the Ivy League. So, you know, I'm just excited to see what happens in the landscape and, you know, where this trend goes.
Matt, Ty mentioned the word exciting, and I think that one of the ways in which that's true is, you know, this is, and Quint talked about this in his opinion piece, this really is free agency in a way that's usually reserved for pro sports. How do you react to that, and what do you see happening as this whole situation and scenario unfolds over the coming days, weeks, and months?
Yeah, it's unprecedented, and, you know, it's not something that this sport is used to, you know, honestly, not even at a professional level with the way that the MLL and the PLL are structured. So this is like really lacrosse's first foray into this, I don't want to say wild, wild west or whatever, but this free-for-all of free agents that are out there. But I think people need to remember that there is still like a lot to consider. And so a lot of the stuff we talked about the first time around when we did this podcast is still relevant this time around. It's still a sport where, you know, we're not talking about a lot of money for these athletes. So there's still got to be an academic alignment somewhere. There's still got to be, you know, kind of the financial fit and, you know, the scholarship things are definitely up in the air, as you alluded to, in terms of which schools are going to allow, you know, the returning fifth year players to count toward, you know, not toward their 12.6 and how much other money is available at those schools. So it's definitely exciting in that regard, but it's definitely, you know, new territory. And it's complicated by the fact that there aren't the traditional avenues for, you know, these kids to kind of explore the school. It's not like you can go take a drive to the school and walk around the campus right now and figure out, you know, if you like it or not. This is all being done, you know, through technology and through other means. It's really just unprecedented. And I don't know if exciting is the word I want to use, but it's wild.
Ty, in addition to this, you know, happening during a NCAA dead period that's been extended through May 31st, Matt just mentioned all the governmental lockdowns and the fact that it was a holiday weekend. What are you hearing from coaches that you're talking to in terms of how they're navigating the transfer portal and guys showing up in it, particularly if they're at an institution where they can accept transfers? They have space on their roster. They have space in their scholarship limit.
Yeah, you know, it feels like it's just very preliminary. You know, I think what's so important, you know, like as Matt alluded to, you know, two of the main themes and things that are important to remember to me, I feel like, are, yeah, like you said, that we're dealing with 12.6 in some cases, you know, no scholarships at all. So, like, yeah, it's free agency to a degree, but, you know, I think the approach to building your roster in this, you know, kind of like unprecedented era will have to be different. And, you know, there are, the second thing is, like, there's so many unknowns. And, you know, there's still so much uncertainty, so many unanswered questions. So while these guys are trying to figure out and find the money to get these kind of one-year rentals is what I've, you know, said, it's very preliminary. They're figuring out the money for their current roster. They're watching film on the guys in the transfer portal and just, you know, taking their time and figuring out how this will all work, you know, while navigating the waters. And I think that there were definitely some conversations that were had, you know, over the last couple of days, but as we know, you can't make those visits. You can't, nothing is easy. Nothing is straightforward. So I expect, you know, this whole transfer ordeal to be drawn out for several weeks rather than see, you know, many decisions in the near future.
You broke news on, two of the biggest transfers of each of the two prior summers, TD Erland's transfer from Albany to Yale and Chris Gray's transfer from Boston University to North Carolina. What did you learn from those experiences that is going to inform how you track guys' movements over the course of the next couple of weeks and months?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's an interesting, you know, thing to consider because I think in the past, you know, these schools had more money to deal with. And I also think that, you know, once the transfer portal became a thing, really, like, there are some coaches out there that are just learning to save money, you know, to not use up 12.6 and be smart, knowing that there's such a high potential, you know, for, you know, big names being out there. But yeah, with Gray and Scanlon and TD, you know, it was a pretty, you know, wild ride that these guys went on. But some like this, it's different. You know, take a guy like Michael Sowers, for example. I mean, anybody can, you know, speculate over, you know, where he may end up. I think it's interesting. I mean, it'd be very easy to say, oh, maybe a high academic school, you know, given that he's about to exit with a Princeton degree, but also for a kid that hasn't made the national, you know, hasn't made the postseason, a national championship is, you know, a big priority for him, as it should be. So it'll be interesting to see what the balance is between, you know, title contenders, elite academic schools, the good grad programs, and, you know, thinking about the cost as well, knowing that, you know, it'll be very different from school to school. So I think, you know, I'm intrigued about that angle. And I think, you know, what one Ivy League coach said to me, you know, recently is we're talking about the money, and he says, well, you know, Ivy League parents, they're all used to paying for school anyway. And, you know, that's definitely something that's very true. Of course, financial aid is a huge part of that. But, you know, I'm curious to see what happens there. Cause I do feel like it'll be very different in the past couple of years.
Matt, I want to talk specifically about Michael Sowers, and particularly in the sense that he was kind of a lens through which this story developed before we can start speculating you know, throwing out scenarios that might make sense in terms of looking at the 2021 season. But, you know, through his communications with the media, whether it was Dana O'Neill in The Athletic or U.S. Lacrosse or you and Ty and everyone else who's been in contact with him, you know, he really did kind of serve as a little bit of an avatar for the first hoped for NCAA decision that supplied a blanket waiver to the entire spring sport college athlete community. And then the waiting game that emerged with the Ivy League. I mentioned that first, I believe on April 2nd, there was a pronouncement from the league that essentially made it clear that grad students wouldn't be allowed to participate, wouldn't be eligible to participate. And then, like I mentioned, on April either 8th or 9th, the president's put forward a statement that affirmed that they shouldn't allow, schools should not allow students, undergrads, to withdraw and re-enroll. So, because, you know, through that lens, how did you kind of understand the way in which, you know, hopes were lifted and then ultimately fell flat, as well as the way in which these athletes were navigating this scenario?
Yeah, with him in particular, it's kind of funny. It's ironic that, you know, he's been under more spotlight since the lacrosse season has been over than he ever has been in his lacrosse career, which is just amazing considering what he's accomplished in his lacrosse career. And I think that speaks a lot about this situation and the amount of unknowns and the amount of unknowns that kind of specifically happened to him. You know, I remember speaking with him back when the NCAA granted the extra year of eligibility, the blanket waiver. And, you know, him and his family were sitting around the kitchen table refreshing Twitter, you know, to kind of see if the Ivy League had anything to add about that. You know, so it's definitely interesting. And, you know, he's certainly, like you said, the avatar through which the unknowns are. And, you know, I think it shows that, like, you know, it's revealing the smallness of the lacrosse community in some ways. You know, Michael Sowers, as you mentioned, the Dana O'Neill piece where, you know, he spoke about the withdrawal process. And, you know, I don't know where along the lines if his words got misinterpreted, if he misspoke. But, you know, that kind of put another spotlight on the sport of lacrosse that, you know, I don't think the sport was prepared for. You know, and Sowers himself has been had all this media contact that, you know, he hasn't had before. To me, it revealed that, you know, the point I was making earlier, lacrosse is wading into this free agency period. But, you know, I don't know if anyone in the sport is really prepared, you know, for what that means.
Ty, do you have anything to add? I know that you had some strong feelings around, you know, what resulted from the lack of clarity or lack of certainty with respect to these Ivy League athletes.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I think, you know, it's still wild to take in. You know, I think that for everybody, it's just been this wide range of emotions. And, you know, I definitely feel, you know, like Sowers is the avatar or, you know, I mean, I don't want to say poster boy, but he's been the center of media focus. And I think that, you know, on a bigger scale, I think it's something that matters when the best player in a sport, you know, puts his name in the transfer portal and almost like doesn't have a choice. Obviously he has a choice in the sense that he could go on and start his professional career in the PLL and have a great job, you know, and start things that way. But this has never been a thing where it's like out of their control. They can't play for their school next year and are suddenly looking elsewhere. So I'm really, you know, I'm kind of blown away at how big this has gotten and certainly excited to see what happens. But yeah, I mean, everything about what we're all experiencing is unprecedented. And I think that it's, you know, personally, and I'm sure for you guys as well, it's been just fascinating to learn more and more every day and try and wrap our heads around, you know, what's happening right now, because it's pretty mind blowing. And like we said a million times, you know, unprecedented in every way.
Ty, I want to step in real quick before you answer another question, Terry. Like, Ty, the thing that you said there that, you know, I want to build on is, you know, it's all been out of his control. And I think that's just a key point to make with Sowers specifically. You know, Sowers was dying to come back to Princeton. He's a guy that is as loyal to that program as any kid in the country is loyal to their college program. So, you know, he hasn't had control of the situation. It's all been thrust upon him. I think, you know, you could ask him probably, you know, next year when he's on another team, you know, what would have been your ideal scenario? And that would be suiting up for the Princeton Tigers again and taking them into the postseason. Now, though, he actually has some semblance of control in this because he gets to pick where he goes next. You know, obviously there's factors of academics, there's factors of finances, but, you know, now it's all in his hands. So I feel kind of good for him in that sense that he's had all this thrust upon him. Now it's time for him to take control of the situation and pick what's best for him and his family.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to add to that, I think that, you know, just looking back at his recruitment and, you know, his Princeton career, you know, he was recruited by Chris Bates and played for Matt Matalon and, you know, will now play for another, you know, another head coach in the near future and a third offensive coordinator. So, you know, things have been kind of all over the place for him and he has adapted to all that and was just outrageous this year. So, you know, I love, you know, the way that you spoke about this point in terms of him having control and how refreshing that is for him, I'm sure. while I'm sure overwhelming as well. But it'll be fun to see. I mean, I think a lot of eyes are on this. The tweet that I put out about Sauer's entering the portal, I think, it was interesting to see the amount of kind of mainstream attention it got from, people like, Field Yates from NFL Network or Mike Golic Jr. This is something that is just big in all of sports, and not just lacrosse. And when a player, averages close to 10 points in a game, it's going to draw that level of attention.
So I want to transition to talking about some of the individuals that are in the portal and what it potentially means for roster composition next year. But I also want to put a bow around the idea of why talking specifically about these Ivy League institutions and their respective policies and the outcomes of those is important. And certainly it starts with the fact that three Ivy League teams were in the top five. It includes the fact that a big reason why that was the case is because of some of the seniors that were on those rosters that now won't be able to come back. So in terms of just kind of the status at the moment, like I said, we know that Princeton, Harvard, and Yale have made issuances to their student athletes that they will not be able to return. So we've seen, in addition to Sauer's, two other Princeton Tigers seniors enter the transfer portal. And we should, now's as good as time as any to include the caveat that this does not mean that they are necessarily going to transfer. It's just that they will now and can be contacted by other coaches to explore their options. But Philip Robertson and Connor McCarthy, Robertson, an attackman whose brother Joe is a attackman at Duke, and McCarthy, who's been featured a couple times on Inside the Cross as a breakout senior midfielder for the Tigers this year, are both in the portal. Yale currently does not have a senior in the portal, and to my knowledge, neither does Harvard. However, they have, I believe, three players who have an additional year left in Cambridge that are looking to take their additional year in the 2022 season as grad students. Does that all match up with what you understand to be the case, Ty?
Yes. Yep.
And moving on quickly, so we do not know what the institutional decisions will be yet at the other five members. I believe Brown, Cornell, and Dartmouth do not have, or at least Brown and Cornell do not yet have a senior in the transfer portal. Dartmouth may have one, but that's escaping memory. And then Penn, where there's been some slight indications that perhaps there is an ability to return, although it might be quite onerous, has two players in the transfer portal at the moment. Kyle Gallagher, the senior faceoff specialist, who's a transfer from Hofstra, as well as Kyle Thornton, who is a defenseman and has been a really highly touted player throughout the course of his career. And the reason I wanted to do that and structure it that way is because I think Kyle Gallagher might end up being the second most impactful player that is currently in the transfer portal behind Sauer's. Ty, what do you think of, kind of the overall makeup of this current crop of available talent, and how do you start to parse through who some of the most desirable players are?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I think that, one of the main, things that I've heard from different coaches is that the supply and demand, don't really match up. There's a lot of players that are in the portal or that will be in the portal, including some excellent Division III, talent as well. But I just don't know how many spots there will be. It'll be interesting to see, how these guys get matched up with schools between, grad programs and years of eligibility. I think a guy like Mike Adler is going to be very coveted from St. Joseph's. I know he's had some talks with, Hopkins, Duke, Ohio State, Denver, places like that. Knowing that he has 2 years of eligibility is pretty huge. But I agree. I think Sauer's and Gallagher are certainly one too. But there's a lot of, pretty intriguing names, a lot of offensive players that I think you could probably put, on the same level for the most part. So it'll be interesting to see, what happens there. Knowing that a lot of offensive talent will be returning next year and a lot will come in the freshman class. So, I'm just generally interested to see, what happens with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, I would say that one of the things that immediately jumps out to me is that relative to normal, there are a lot of goalies and a lot of faceoff guys. And I think those tend to be two spots where coaches are a little bit more willing to entertain bringing in a transfer because of the isolated nature of the position, it doesn't necessarily have the same ripple effect throughout the rest of the roster as a midfielder, a defenseman, or an attackman does. And at the other end of the spectrum, it does, you know, it does have a significant effect because of the way they can kind of cascade down the depth chart, so to speak. You know, they tend to be positions where, you know, really only one guy gets a shot. So if you bring in a faceoff guy and he emerges as your starter, well, that's probably going to come at the expense of somebody else's playing time. So, Matt, in your conversations, what has been your sense of how coaches are handling this or approaching this from a team chemistry standpoint?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And tied to your point about Sowers and Gallagher being 1-2 on the rankings, I certainly think that's the case. And also, you know, I'd heard a rumor of a team that's trying to approach both of them and get them together, which would be an interesting coup there. But anyway, to the chemistry point, you know, I think the faceoff and goalie are unique circumstances for a lot of the reasons that you described. You know, there's a clear, like, hey, this person individually can make us better at this one position that is, you know, pretty individual focused. That's a pretty easy sell to the rest of your roster, you know, besides obviously the person whose spot that they're taking. But when you get into, like, you know, rosters where maybe you have four or five guys trying to get some playing time at a certain position, you really need to add a guy that I think is a clear upgrade to your roster in the sense, or, you know, just because, like, you're not going to add a guy that's like a little bit better than your third attackman to be your third attackman, because you don't know how that's going to affect the chemistry of the rest of your roster. Of, you know, you have some other guys who are like, hey, maybe I thought that was going to be my spot this year. I don't know this guy. He hasn't put in the work. You know, I think that there's going to be like a little bit of like those guys who are maybe helpful roster guys that, you know, maybe they'll end up on a roster and be a depth guy, but like, I don't know. I think you got to go for a guy that's going to be a clear upgrade because the team will understand that, you know, this guy really helps our club significantly. So we need to add him, and, you know, someone is going to have to sacrifice for that. But if he's a guy that's just going to kind of be right there on par with the rest of your team, I don't know if you really take that chance and maybe sour the chemistry.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. You know, I think if you, you know, it certainly is more attractive to look at a faceoff guy or goalie knowing that only one guy can play. You know, you don't want to rock the boat, you know, by taking an attackman and a midi, you know, when you already have some pretty capable, you know, guys on your roster. I mean, I think it's very, very different, but, you know, covering the high school ranks, I've always been, you know, intrigued by to kind of, you know, projecting the potential of these teams that take a very talented PG. You know, how are they going to fit in with guys that have been on the roster for 3-4 years, you know, building the culture that way? You know, how will they mesh? You know, I think the dynamic of a super team doesn't always work out, you know, the way that we projected that it will, you know, on paper. So I think that's the other, you know, aspect of this that's pretty, you know, fascinating to follow.
100%. The Philadelphia Eagles would like to weigh in on the notion of a super team. Ty, how do you balance the value of a guy coming in with 1 year versus multiple years?
Yeah, I mean, that's another, you know, great question. You know, it's hard to say, because I think you start to look at these 4 year guys and, you know, they've shown what they can do. They have multiple years of stats, you know, whereas I feel like there's the handful of underclassmen that have been that were very, very proven at the high school level and Under Armour All-Americans, but you know, didn't see a ton of burn. I mean, I think of, you know, someone like BJ Berlaes, who I think is phenomenal. I watched a ton of him in high school, and he can change a game. You know, I think, you know, pretty similarly to a guy like, you know, Brian Farrell to a degree, you know, a former Terp, you know, but how do you measure him against, you know, I don't know, someone like Jack Rapine, you know, who's in the portal after starting for 3 years at Hopkins, you know, or another, you know, defenseman out there. It's all hard to say, but I think that there's definitely a number of really intriguing underclassmen in the portal. But I'm intrigued to see how, you know, these coaches measure those guys up to somebody else. You know, Jared Fernandez is another name who I think is outstanding. You know, LSM at Syracuse who started for them. So, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to see what happens.
Matt, is there one guy whose name has entered the portal you're particularly interested in seeing what happens, whether it's he returns to his institution because he's capable, whether it's he lands somewhere else or decides to move on? Is there, you know, one individual who you've got your eye on whose choice you're particularly curious because you don't know which way it's going to go?
So besides Michael Sowers, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. Besides anybody that we have currently discussed.
Well, I think that the Ty alluded to it, but the D3 guys, you know, Brennan Hoffman from Williams is a guy who I think is an intriguing talent who could end up on a roster. Colin Minicus from Amherst is a guy, you know, mostly maybe it's just the curiosity of how these guys go at the next level because there's a little bit of unknown there. But Charlie Bertrand is another one who just entered today. You know, I think he's probably going to end up back at Merrimack College, but, you know, he has made that leap from Merrimack as a D2 program to Merrimack as a D1 program, is in this kind of weird gray area where the team is not eligible. So I'm curious how his process nets out, even though I think he's probably going to end up back at Merrimack. But if he does not, I would certainly be curious to see what he can do potentially in an NCAA tournament.
Unbelievable upset there. I thought it was all but assured you were going to pick Will York, the senior attackman from Bucknell, who had a breakthrough season this year and was our breakthrough player of the year. I think he and McCarthy are two guys that are really interesting. Because of that, you know, it's uncertain exactly what you can expect from them, you know, on the basis of how this season compared to, you know, their career leading up to this point. So those are two guys that I'm particularly interested in, because for me, one of the things about this whole situation that is extra fascinating is how coaches decide to value additional years of eligibility with the combination of increased future production versus proven production and only a year left. And it's not to say that they're mutually exclusive, right? You know, theoretically, a program could go after Michael Sowers and Dylan Polinetti, who's got Under Armour All-American, who's got 4 years of eligibility remaining while leaving Maryland. But, you know, whether or not they're the same player, which they aren't, but theoretically both attackmen, you know, could potentially be competing for one roster spot heading into 2021, you know, what do you want to get out of it? 1 year of toward and level play, or 4 years where you don't know what the ceiling is, but certainly at one point in his career, it was projected to be very, very high.
And Terry, one thing that kind of fits into that is if for some reason you are a program that does not use all 12.6, but maybe has the ability to convince your administration to let you go up to that, you could really clean up with this year just for the one year people kind of go up to the max for 1 year and then go back down. Could be a really interesting strategy.
So Ty, I'll leave you with this, and I'm not asking you to predict the future, but I think we do have a sense that, you know, the guys that are currently in the portal are not the only guys that will be in the portal. What are you watching for trend wise with respect to how new names end up in there and how that impacts the conversations that have already gotten underway?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly intrigued to, you know, to see what happens with Cornell and Brown, you know, and some of these guys from Yale and Penn. So, you know, I mean, just with how talented the Ivy League was, I'm really excited to see, you know, what happens with a guy like Jackson Morrill. You know, we know T.D. Erland's moving on. You know, what does Kyle Thornton do as a captain? Does he move on to professional career, or does he, you know, stay? What does Gallagher do? So I'm really interested to see all that, you know, and I'll leave you this question for both of you before we move on. How many college coaches do you think have logged on to Amazon.com and, you know, purchased a copy of Moneyball by Michael Lewis?
Well, I would hope that the 2020 Face-Off Yearbook is in higher demand than it otherwise would have been among that contingent, particularly relative to the Division III content.
Well played.
Matt, what are your thoughts on how this impacts the NLL draft?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic that I wanted to make sure we squeezed in here. You know, this was going to be kind of an unprecedented year for really good, talented players coming out of college in the NLL draft. So, you know, it really, like, if you're an NLL GM and somehow you stockpiled some picks for the first or second round in this NLL draft, you're kind of shaking a little bit right now, because, you know, this is a potentially huge amount of players. You know, Jeff Teed is obviously I'd say the headliner in this, but you know, everyone in that first round could end up not going into the NLL, which will make a super draft in 2021. That's going to be absolutely crazy to see, where if you have a bunch of draft picks in those early rounds of 2021, you can clean up as an NLL GM.
Well, and PLL, you know?
Yeah. If they have a season. Yeah.
Well, it'll certainly be an incredibly dramatic situation to follow. And Inside Lacrosse will be there all the rest of the way to figure out where these incredible college lacrosse stars land. Really appreciate your time listening to the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Certainly appreciate your time, Matt and Ty, for joining us. And we will be back later in the week with more Inside Lacrosse podcasts.